From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Under President Donald Trump, the militarization of outer space has made a big jump, with the recent formal creation of Space Force, an idea that started out almost as a joke during a Trump speech. Now, with bipartisan support, the U.S. military has a foothold in space. But beyond militarization, the realm of outer space has long been sought by commercial interests. Some of the world's richest men, such as Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, have been openly eyeing expansion into space. Now, a new book critiques our rush to commercialize the skies above us. It's written by Peter Ward. He's a journalist whose work has appeared in GQ, Bloomberg, The Economist, and Newsweek. And he now joins me to discuss his new book called The Consequential Frontier, Challenging the Privatization of Space. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Thanks, Nari. Great to be on the show.
So I suppose one can trace back the fascination in the modern era of space to the Cold War, right? When the US and then Soviet Union had this race to send a man to the moon, a human being to the moon. Is that sort of where the modern era of humans entering space, physically being in space, begins?
Yeah, I think you could definitely say that that's the first era. That was obviously when Russia and America, back then it was the Soviet Union, of course, were racing against each other to get up into space. That was spurred on by the Cold War. So the rivalry between those two great powers really got everything going. And obviously the Soviet Union won in many aspects. They got the first satellite up. They got the first person into space. And then in 1969, America obviously put men on the moon, and that sort of, for a lot of people, Americans at least, drew a line under the race and said that America had won. So yeah, that was definitely the first era, and that was very much kind of motivated by kind of nationalism and those two nations competing.
And so it became apparent to world powers that outer space was going to be this realm where countries would attempt to have a foothold. But whatever happens in the skies above us can very seriously impact those below. So what actions took place on the international level to at least try to ensure that space would not become a realm of war, or even, for that matter, a space, you know, for commercial interests to abuse power?
Yeah. So the major thing that happened was in 1967, all of the major countries signed up to what was called the Outer Space Treaty, which is a document which basically set out some rules for going to space. It said that you can't colonize parts of other planets or the moon. You can't claim territory in space. It also said that you can't take weapons of mass destruction up into space, which was a big concern back then, that it could be, you could send sort of satellites that were armed up into space and they could shoot down towards the Earth. So it really laid down a lot of the laws back then, and it was quite it was almost a miracle that the treaty got agreed upon, given that it was at the height of the Cold War and both the Soviet Union and America signed up to it, and so did any other nation which had sort of any major space ambitions. The only problem with it is that it hasn't been updated to this day. That's still the kind of reigning document which tells you what you can and can't do in outer space.
And so does the US's Space Force and all of the commercial interests that have cropped up since then, do those violate the Outer Space Treaty?
It depends on who you talk to, basically which lawyer you talk to. So the Outer Space Treaty, obviously it was written in 1967, so it was a long time ago. It was really before a commercial space sector had ever been sort of imagined. So it predates commercial activities in space on a large scale, certainly. So it never really took into account private companies and what they could do into space. In terms of a space force, it would limit what a Space Force would do, but I don't think anything proposed so far would go against it. The treaty itself was written with a fair amount of ambiguity sort of written into it. Some say that was kind of purposeful to get everyone to sign it. So there's a lot of ways you can interpret the different laws within it. At the moment, no one has made a shocking aberration against the Outer Space Treaty, but it's certainly something that's coming more and more into debate as more activity goes on in space.
So today, the highest profile commercial interests that we might hear about in the headlines are Elon Musk's SpaceX project. But really, how commercialized has space become so far?
So it's been a gradual move. Obviously, back when we spoke about it at the start, you had just kind of NASA versus the Soviet space program, and then we kind of saw private-public partnerships. So we've had companies like Boeing and those type of companies have had contracts with NASA for a very long time, and in those arrangements, those companies have been the customer of NASA. So NASA will start a project and they will say, you know, we want to get to the moon, we need to build this specific part for our rocket build this rocket, but we're launching the mission. Nowadays, NASA has become the client themselves. So they're basically just booking a ride on a rocket to space via SpaceX, via Blue Origin or other private companies. So you see the role of the national of the public sector companies has changed from contractor to client, basically.
So would you then say that government exploration of space has gone hand in hand with commercial interests, that they've basically piggybacked on one another?
Yeah, to a certain extent. The private companies would not have survived without the contracts that they get from the public sector, so the likes of NASA. So SpaceX and Blue Origin, for example, rely heavily on government contracts, and they probably always will, because governments are almost definitely going to be in the top three entities that require access to space. So that's for many reasons: government satellites, military reasons. So the private sector has always relied on those public contracts. It is shifting, I think, the other way. There's more ways you can make money in space now that doesn't rely on a government contract. You've seen recently that SpaceX has sent up all those satellites to build Starlink, the which will basically offer internet to people here on Earth. So that there are more and more ways to make money in space, and it's cheaper to send something into space. So I think we'll see more private operations that don't rely on the likes of NASA at all.
What is your view of the main commercial interests that we might see on the horizon right now? Are all interests that are looking to make a profit through expanding into space necessarily good or necessarily bad? Or is the truth somewhere in between?
I think ultimately the truth is somewhere in between. The potential for bad, though, is absolutely huge, and that's what's terrifying, and that's what I think no one's really paying attention to.
So delivering internet to everybody by putting up a satellite in space sounds like a great idea. That sounds like it might be one of the sort of positive aspects of commercialization in space. Not that it necessarily even has to be commercial. One can imagine government entities coming together to do the same thing.
Yes, so that's a good example. To everyone, it would seem like a very, you know, it's a very positive thing. You're delivering internet to everyone. You may be able to do it at cheaper prices. It may be more effective. But also, it does have its downsides. For example, the astronomers have come out and said that this is an extremely bad thing because they're sending up these constellation of satellites. They're very small satellites, and there's a lot of them. And they're basically making it harder to see space for astronomers. They're cluttering up the skies, essentially. And added to that, we have a huge space debris problem where we've got so much debris just flying around the inner Earth orbit that it's becoming a dangerous place to be.
And I'm sure there are people who are thinking the same question that I have in mind. Is this debris something that can become a potentially, fatal problem for Earth?
So it probably wouldn't affect us here on Earth. I mean, it wouldn't be a fatal problem here on Earth. Essentially, if you've seen the movie Gravity with Sandra Bullock, that's a very realistic depiction of what could happen if a space debris cloud started orbiting around the Earth. It could hit something like the International Space Station and completely destroy it. And if anyone was on that at the time, obviously they would have almost zero chance of survival. Mm-hmm. In terms of how it would affect us here on Earth, it could take down satellites, it could take down our communications, it could take down our internet if we rely on satellites for that. It could destroy military satellites. So it could have a large effect on us here on Earth, but there's no potential of it, something crashing down on Earth, basically.
So what are the worst case scenarios for commercial interest in space? Your book is called The Consequential Frontier, Challenging the Privatization of Space. How do you challenge, what are the private interests that you're challenging?
So I think I made the book into three sections. So the first section was the history, which kind of brought us up to date to where we are now. The second section was a kind of snapshot of the private sector now. And then the last section looked at the future. And obviously, the further you look into the future, the more potential to look silly you have, essentially. In that future, I looked, as far as possible into things like space colonization. So if we were to build a base on the moon, for example, or if you were to go out to Mars and build a base on Mars, if that was a private company that did that, then it throws up a whole load of questions in terms of how democracy would be represented, how that would be carried out on this new kind of colony, because this would be one company that would basically control everything. If you imagine you're a citizen in this colony on the moon or Mars, then you would rely on this one company for your oxygen, your water, your food, your transport, and everything. That kind of monopoly situation is extremely dangerous. And it sounds very far-fetched, and a lot of people think it is far-fetched. But if you consider that the world's richest man is one of the people that wants to do this, then you can see it is actually possible.
Jeff Bezos has talked about that, and he certainly seems to have endless resources at his disposal. I mean, could such a thing happen in his lifetime? He's not young.
I mean, I think the thing with technology, and this is technology driven, is that, it grows exponentially. So you can reach a certain point. I think we are reaching a sort of tipping point where things are speeding up very fast now. So you've seen the cost of launching a rocket come down drastically as soon as we mastered the reusable rocket. So that's really was a huge barrier to entry, which has been lowered significantly. So it costs less to launch a rocket. So this thing could gather momentum very quickly. And if you have these guys with billions and billions of dollars just pumping in resources, then we could see things moving very fast. And that's one thing about the private sector, is that they can move faster than the likes of NASA. So a lot of people complain that, we went to the moon in 1969, but we haven't done anything too exciting since, that we don't have a base on the moon, we don't have a base on Mars. And that's actually what motivates the likes of Bezos and Musk. They don't think that we've done enough, and they know that with a private company, they can do more and they can do it faster. The only thing is that we don't know if there's enough regulation and oversight to see if they're doing things correctly.
Doesn't it take a tremendous amount of energy to get something off the ground? As NASA knows, when it launches its space telescopes, for example, I imagine that a commercialization of space that involves sending lots of things into space would also greatly impact the climate.
I mean, right now it would take a significant more increase in the number of rockets launching. The good thing about a rocket is that it burns hydrogen. So actually when it burns, it just sort of makes steam, essentially. So there's actually not a huge carbon footprint on a rocket. But you see, I mean, I thought exactly the same thing as you. When you see these huge rockets going up with the massive clouds behind them, you imagine that there's no way that can be good for the environment. But it's actually not as bad as it have to increase by a dramatic way. I think we'd have to all basically be going to the moon if it were to overtake the aviation industry, for example, in terms of its climate impact.
Right, flying around on commercial airplanes within the Earth's atmosphere actually has, perhaps I imagine, a greater climate footprint than sending rockets into space, which seems to defy logic, but it's a matter of the kind of energy that's used. So we've talked about commercial interests under the auspices of people like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk. What about other countries? What about countries like Russia and China? Is there a race for the commercialization of space internationally?
So China is kind of the dark horse here, because China doesn't tell anyone really what it's doing until it does it. And in the past couple of decades, China has been building a space program, but it's really just been ticking the boxes of things that other countries have already done. So it put a space station into orbit, and it did the things that America and Russia have already done, essentially. But last year, it actually exceeded some of those countries when it landed on the far side of the moon. So that was really like a huge moment for the Chinese space program, and that they'd achieved something that no other country had ever done before. I think that made the likes of NASA and other countries really stand up and take notice and acknowledge that China is now a major space power. In terms of their commercial ideas, I think it's hard to tell, because the government and the private sector in China, it's kind of blurred in any industry. You don't know which private companies, how much influence the government have over them. But from my reporting for the book, I did get the sense that China really wants to have a SpaceX within its country. So it would like nothing more than a SpaceX to emerge. It does have a kind of a rocket industry. It's very new, and they haven't really. I think they've put a satellite in orbit. I think that's as far as they've gone. But only one company has done it. So they are investing money and trying to make a private space sector in China. But they're still at the early stages there.
You talked earlier about this idea of, company creating a colony on, say, the moon or Mars. But what about mining for minerals? That has been, I know, an area that companies have salivated over, this idea that so many of the minerals that are used for technology here on Earth can be found in abundance in space, depending on where you look. Are there interests that are looking to that frontier?
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of the scary things about the private space sector, is that there are resources in space. And we know what's happened historically with humans when they find resources. We've almost always killed each other to get them. And really, obviously, we don't want that to happen in space. We don't want that to happen again. But there is potential to get minerals. There's a potential to, if we were to get find water on the moon, for example, then that could be, you could take the hydrogen from the moon, from that water, and then use the moon as basically a gas station, where you would send rockets to the moon. They would fuel up essentially at them in the orbit of the moon, and then they would go further off into the solar system. So that's the way that you could exploit resources on the moon, certainly.
And why is that bad? Why would a corporation challenging you saying, so what?
Yeah, so as long as there were enough of them and they were doing things correctly, then that would be fine. But if one company were to do it, they would have a monopoly on the moon, essentially. Imagine if there was only one gas station in space and one company controlled it, they could pick and choose who was able to get further into space, essentially, and to fuel up at their gas station. So as much as we try and even Jeff Bezos saying that he wants to move industry to the moon, the potential for monopoly is huge, just because it's really hard to imagine there being several companies there. And if someone controls the logistics, the transport to and from that place, then they control the whole thing.
And Jeff Bezos knows a thing or two about monopolies. So finally, what is required then? An update of the Outer Space Treaty. I mean, unfortunately, we live at this time when free market economics on the global scale are just considered a given as good, as beneficial to all, even though, of course, capitalism has shown to have had so many failures. Our wealth inequality here on Earth is just increasing over the years. I can't imagine that countries would come together to update the Outer Space Treaty in such a way as to curb corporate profits, but or the corporate thirst to commercialize space. But is that what's needed?
Yeah, that's definitely what's needed. Like you said, whether that's going to happen or not, it seems unfortunately unlikely. But what really needs to happen is countries and the private sector need to sit down in one room and really hash out an updated set of rules for what they can do in space, which take into account the private space sector and also take into account the potential of the private space sector to move us on as a species. I think as much as my book slightly always warns against the potential consequences, I think you also have to acknowledge that the private space sector has a huge potential to really push us on in terms of our potential in space and what we can achieve in space. It's just getting that kind of balance between, you know, allowing them to do what they need to do and holding them back from doing something evil, essentially. And I guess that's been a balance that we've been looking for on Earth forever, essentially, since industrialization probably, and never quite found it. The good thing about space is that it's almost a blank slate. It's a clean slate that we can set up these rules. And so there is still some hope there.
How do you respond to those who might say we should clean up our act here on Earth before going into space?
Yeah. I mean, I potentially agree, but I think it's a slightly irrelevant question. I think it's the same thing as saying, you know, should we play around with CRISPR and do gene editing to improve ourselves as humans? We can say that we shouldn't all we want, but someone will. So it's going to happen, particularly when the world's richest men in the world want it to happen. It is going to happen. So I think, you know, that question is nice philosophically, but it doesn't really have any relevance when you think it's going to happen anyway, whether we think it should or not. So it's time really to look at the consequences and try and deal with those instead.
Peter, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much, Nani. It's been great to be on the show.
My guest has been Peter Ward, journalist whose work has appeared in GQ, Bloomberg, The Economist, and Newsweek. We've been talking about his new book, The Consequential Frontier, Challenging the Privatization of Space. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.